Happy New Year, everybody. It's our first show of the new year. Hey, Stephanie.
Yippee! Hi!
Oh my God, there's so much to talk about.
I know.
It's just crazy. Jeez. Bob just told me it was the 10th. Is it the 10th?
Yeah.
God, I don't even know
the
date.
Freaking 10th.
Unbelievable.
You know, I don't know the day. I don't know the date. All I know.
Is it impeachment is day
it's
yet?
Been, yeah. Does this feel like dog years to you? You know?
Totally.
I'm 106. since last November, I'm 106. Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what? There's so much to talk about. I'm just going to list some of the things I have that I'm hoping we can address. I'm sure you have things we can address, but I just kind of want to run down the list and let everybody know, you know, I don't know how long we're going to do this show. I mean, usually we do it 45 minutes to an hour, hoping to stick to that. I don't know what your time schedule is, but since it's the first day and there's so much to talk about, we might go a little bit over. Anyway.
Oh yeah. Could
so
be.
There's the award show. There's the Golden Globes and the Oprah situation, and then sneaky ass Di-Fi. Dianne Feinstein. and also, I want to talk a little tiny bit about some progressive women that are running and how we're going to be focusing on some progressives with the show this year. Talk about some narratives of Trump. The narrative on Trump is kind of changing, in my opinion. I bought Fire and Fury and I'm reading it. And
oh my God, I ordered mine and it hasn't.
Yeah, mine
has,
you know what? I'm impatient. Mine hasn't come, so I also ordered the Kindle. So I started reading it last night. And then maybe we can get to Michelle Williams earning less money than Marky Mark and a couple other things. But that's basically what's on the schedule today. And then whatever else you want to bring to the conversation.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you. Okay. Right? Exactly. It's funny because there's just so much to keep up with, you know, that I'm jotting as you're talking. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I almost forgot about the Dianne Feinstein rogue maneuver.
That was
yesterday.
I mean,
I know it. That's my point. It's completely and 100% insane.
Yeah. And, you know, Trump is a very stable genius. So we have to make sure everybody knows that.
Do you guys look at him sometimes and think that's a, like, I look at him when he's speaking and I think that's the face that a crazy person makes. Now, and I'm not trying to be funny. He looks nuts. Like when he's trying to, there's a picture of him, a meme that came out where he was trying to like cross hands and hold hands with other world leaders. And his mouth is agape. His fucking mouth is agape. He's so...
But Stephanie, he is a very stable genius.
Just ask him. I went to very good colleges. I mean college.
I'm like really smart.
I'm so smart. I have 5 words. Good, tremendous.
But they're the best
very
words.
Very good, huge.
God, he's such a fucking dick.
Sleepy.
Okay.
Sneaky, sloppy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So first I want to get to the award show because definitely want to talk about that. But I want to say I had not planned on watching it. And it's not, it was Sunday. I was busy. I was doing my house chores and I didn't really care. Usually I like the Academy Awards. That's what I like to watch. And so then I saw the tweets coming down that people were criticizing women for using the show as a platform to speak about equality. And I'm like, what the fuck is I got to turn this on? I knew that all the women were planning on wearing black. But what I didn't expect was, at least for me, watching that show, it really felt, I had such a, my heart swelled. I don't know how else to say it. I was overwhelmed with hope and inspiration. And I felt like, you know, I'm online, I'm working with other activists online. And so, you know, we all see each other's tweets and Facebook posts and we have our hashtags and we push certain narratives and we try so hard. And then what I saw was all of, you know, not that it was just us or, you know, just online activists, but it was, I think it is like the family of online activists, and I think everybody can be considered an activist in the age of Trump, but I saw it playing out in real life. You know, it's like what I'm used to seeing online, I saw in real life. And it just it just made me so proud and so hopeful, because it was clear to me that this was a moment that I think really illustrated the tides are turning. And, you know, I mean, we saw that certain men who are guilty of sexual assault and misconduct have lost their positions, and that is real world activity. But to see so many people, specifically women, you know, having a say and talking about equality in such a way that it wasn't so much of a political message as it was a civil issue, a civil rights issue. And I thought it was absolutely appropriate because, you know, the entertainment industry mirrors reality in so many ways. And so I think that when you're at an entertainment award show, it's perfectly reasonable and not only reasonable, but vital to talk about real life. And this is real life. And it just, it really made me feel like, obviously, Oprah's speech, and then Natalie Portman saying that, you know, introducing the nominees for, I think it was Best Director, and specifying it was all males. And I mean, it was all
then,
of it.
And then, yeah, it reminded, remember when Yentl didn't get nominated for Best?
Yes.
Right? Okay. It's the same fucking thing. And here we are 33 years later, and we're still fighting the same fight. And I feel like we're fighting it even harder. Uh-huh. And the fact that we've made no progress, truly, no progress since then, is alarming. But like you said, the tides are turning, if I'm quoting you correctly.
Yeah.
There is a shift that's happening. When Oprah got up, so my son and I went and saw The Disaster Artist. Uh-huh. We rushed home. My husband had taped the Golden Globes for us, and then we both plopped down on the couch and started it from, didn't see Seth Meyers' monologue, just got kind of to the meat.
Yeah.
And I loved seeing all of these women, you know, the women doll up, they get asked on the carpet who they're wearing. They've been humiliated to the point of putting their hand in the mani cam. I mean, bullshit like that, mm-hmm. where they're objectified beyond, never mind that they're working their asses off as hard as any man who did a movie or directed a movie. But they showed up in black, and some of them really like toned down, like Reese Witherspoon getting up there with just straight hair and lip gloss on. And, you know, it's not about, I want to look good in this black dress for me, motherfuckers, not for you, not for you to decide if I'm thin enough, good enough, toned enough, made up enough, but I'm here for the work, to quote Frances McDormand,
fucking love.
Who showed up in a blue long dress with some freaking platform shoes and messed up hair.
And like no makeup.
She doesn't give a fuck. Okay. Okay. And we're sitting there, and then Oprah comes on and does her thing. And I've got like both of my hands kind of in my mouth, all the fingers. I'm sobbing. Zach walks in. My son's just kind of sitting there like, oh God, here we go. Here we go again. And I said, this is a woman who has walked in the shoes of every marginalized, ostracized, harassed, every racial slur that has been slung. She's felt it all. And that's when I started riding the Oprah for President wave, because no politician ever, that I'm aware of, has ever walked in all of those pairs of shoes.
Right.
And that's why I thought, you know, for somebody to really be able to connect with human beings on a human level, because that's what it's about. You know, these politicians are elected to represent us for our best interest, for world peace, and for, you know, the common good of humanity, the world over. And that's when I got, like, I jumped on a surfboard that night, and I rode that shit all day Monday. I was riding the blue tsunami with an Oprah flag flying, because it felt good to hear somebody with such passion not make herself a victim, not particularly call anybody out, but to cite Recy Taylor's experience and to talk about her mother coming home bone tired and her seeing Sidney Poitier receive and for her to go, whoa, there's somebody that looks like me. Mm-hmm. And we're second class citizens. What the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. Because that's how it feels, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I was moved by that. And then I kind of calmed down. I got into a little bit of a thing with a few people. And I'm like, I just want to know why not Oprah. I want to hear why not. And yeah. The horse whisperer wrote back, because the presidency is a job, not a role. I'm like, a role is also a job. And if you don't think that the job that the president plays is a role, like, I'm sorry. Those are some blurred lines right there. But then I mellowed out. And then it kicked up again for me today because I started realizing, you know, you and I are getting behind a lot of regular folks mm-hmm. who have just decided to step up and run, right? Mm-hmm. People without political experience.
Yeah.
And so I want to know how, you know, Congress is not too many steps away from the presidency. Uh-huh. Granted, the presidency, it's the big job. It's the number one job. But where do we draw the lines of distinction? And, you know, I think everybody's just so soured because we have a celebrity, I'm doing air quotes, because that douchebag that's in office right now mm-hmm. is just a disaster zone,
yeah.
right? So anyway, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Like, how do we reconcile? Because if Oprah does decide to run, Oprah will get the nomination. It's just how it's going to be.
I'm not so convinced that she would. I think that if she got the nomination, I think that she would have a decent chance of winning. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think about it. And it's not that I'm anti-Oprah or anything. Mm-hmm. I would prefer that anybody who was going to run for the presidency should have experience as a public servant. And so that they have established relationships with other people in Congress so that they have a basic understanding of how government works. Outside mm-hmm. of just being somebody like you or me who has that kind of understanding, somebody who's inside and knows little tricks, knows how, you know, because I mean, let's face it, it's a club and mm-hmm. there are ins and outs and there are certain things that, I mean, you know, like Obama didn't just come out of nowhere. He was a senator.
Right.
He seemed to come out of nowhere for people who aren't paying attention. Who was paying attention to the Illinois senators? But, you know, I think that, you know, moving forward outside of Oprah, I think that, you know, once we get a progressive Congress in, I would really love to see a new guideline for running for president, which should not only include public service, you know, serving in some kind of civil servant position for a certain mm-hmm. predetermined amount of time. I think there should be literacy tests. Producer Bob Seska had said, I think last night, you know, they should at least be able to take the same test and pass the same test that immigrants take to get their status here. So
Trump would have flunked.
Yes. So I think that it's not that I'm against Oprah per se. I would prefer to see somebody who's more wonky. I mean, yes, Oprah has walked in the shoes of there's so many different shoes. I mean, as a black woman who has been able to become like an international star and one of the richest people on earth, that's such a huge compliment. So I don't doubt her ability. And I know that she would surround herself with really smart people. But as you said, you know, you and I and other people are getting behind regular everyday people. And actually what I find fascinating is that, you know, we had what we had in 2016 and there was a lot of bad, there was a lot of negative, there was a lot of pain and I've been thinking about this, and right now, you know, since we have the outcome that we had, since Bernie lost and Hillary, air quotes, lost, I think that the result of that, and then Trump, air quotes, won, the result of that situation led to, I think, something much better than either Hillary or Bernie winning. Because if Bernie won, if Hillary won, there would have been a certain amount of, you know, everybody feeling comfortable. But now everybody's uncomfortable and a whole new generation is engaged. A whole new crop of people, whether it's, you know, Hillary inspired women to run, Bernie inspired, you know, millennials to run, and they're running and they're winning. I don't think that would have happened in the same way if either one of them would have won. I'm not wishing, you know, I'm not saying that it's better that it happened this way, but since we're in the situation, I think that it's beneficial that, you know, like, or let me take that back, not beneficial, but it's something, it's an opportunity that's presented itself that I'm really excited about. And so I think in a way for me, as much as I agree with you, and I think she would probably do a good job and could win, I think Oprah still represents kind of like the older, I don't know, like the old school in, even though she's not an old school establishment politician or anything like that. And I say establishment kind of sarcastically, I don't really necessarily think anything's wrong with being an establishment politician, unless you're abusing it and you're not really doing a good job. But I mean, I think that what she represents is not the new wave that we're seeing of, like you said, younger people or new to politics who are, you know, saying, hey, I want to be a part of this. But then again, she's just famous and she's also saying, she might also say, I want to be a part of this. But I don't think she should start with president. I think she should, you know,
I agree.
Run for senator. Run for Daryl Issa's spot.
Yeah. Oh, moved. She probably has a house in La Jolla. You know, she can just run.
Yeah.
I would like to see somebody like, I want to, here's what, I'm going to say this and I mean this. I believe that the shift involves women doing the ruling.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And I, you know, and I want to see two women on the presidential ticket.
Yeah, that would be so awesome.
Okay, period. I mean, unequivocally, that's what I want.
And then a woman chief of staff.
And a woman chief of staff. And, but you know, I just think, I think we have some unbelievably qualified women out there. Let's go Yates Harris. Let's come up with any configuration. I want Sally Yates. Like, I'm not going to let that one go.
No, I know. Well, the thing is I don't think she's going to run. And if she does run, though, she's got to do what Obama did and get out there and make herself known. She, you know, they all say they're not going to run, so you can never know. But I don't think
she
will.
How about Harris Yates?
You know, again, if Yates was up for the job, I'd be all over her.
All over.
But
that.
she would need to really show everybody who she, I mean, you know, right now political junkies are aware of who she is, but outside of that, nobody knows who she is. So she needs to, you know, like Obama was able to, you know, break that wall and he got like the whole country and the whole world excited about him. So that's what Yates would need to do. And, you know, can she do it? Sure. I think she's totally got you know, the charisma, the steady mind and all the, you know, but the 2020 primary challenges are going to be interesting. You know, who it's going to be a large field and it'll be very interesting because, you know, I actually think, though, Bob and I were discussing this last night. I don't think Bernie is going to have
just
this, you know, pillow talk.
I just wanted to be gross.
Pillow talk in bed. I know Bernie's going to run and I know that he's got a large support, you know, supportive following, but I don't think that he's going to read the same way this time. I think that my guess is he's going to stick to the same talking points that he had in 2016. And I also think that if he's going to continue, if he at all continues to bash the Democratic Party, especially after a successful midterm, which we must have, that's not going to ring true. And
no.
I think that his one note messaging will not fly. I don't think he's going to have the same charisma. It's not to say that I don't think he's going to be a big nothing. I just think that it's not. You know, he really had this fire. He was like a fireball.
Yeah.
And he just exploded. Well, you know, obviously, like I said, he's got a huge support base. But I just don't think that I don't think he's going to make it out of the primary.
I really don't.
And that's not based on what I want. It's based on what I think. And I mean, I don't know who's running. You know, I don't know who is going to be, you know, up on that stage competing. But it's just my guess that his time is come and gone.
Right.
For the president. But he still has an important role, just as he always has, with messaging and fighting. You know, because he could be very stubborn. And then sometimes it's frustrating. And then sometimes it's great.
Yeah, I fell in love with him. I had a hard time with the primary season, because I was, you know, I wanted Hillary from the get, and I watched Bernie speak a number of times, and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so torn.
Yeah,
you know, but I don't want him this time around. As much as I adore Joe Biden, I really don't want him to run. Mm-hmm. I think we need new blood.
Yeah, I really don't want Joe Biden to run. No.
Yeah, I want some. I'm still pissed off at Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hold that for a while. but if she gets the nomination, you know, I'm canvassing for her.
Oh yeah, I mean, whoever gets the nom, you know, when I was supporting Bernie during the primaries, I refused to say vote blue no matter who, and the reason I refused that is because I felt as if it was pissing off Bernie people, in that I felt like there was this kind of narrative going on that it's just going to be Hillary. Too bad for you, old man. You're never going to win. So vote blue no matter who. I felt it was at the time condescending. I'm not saying it was. I'm just coming from my personal point of view. I felt that it was kind of a condescending thing. I had always planned on, I was never going to not vote for Hillary if she was the nominee. I was going to enthusiastically vote for her. But I didn't want to push this vote blue no matter who. I just wanted to support my candidate and see how everything shook out. So Bernie lost. And at the time, I was really sad. I literally cried. Things are different for me now. I don't see him in the same way. I don't hate him. But I don't want him. I just don't want him to be the president. I want him to stay where he is, and I want him to keep doing what he's doing. I want him to continue to inspire new people to run for office. I want him to, you know, stay in the Senate and push and you know, be that person who argues and keeps talking about the oligarchs. And the one thing that pisses me off about him, though, is I agree with everything he says. He's absolutely 100% correct about the oligarchs taking over. But what he doesn't push is the fact that we're basically, and this country is not only in a battle with American oligarchs like the Koch brothers, we're also fighting Russian oligarchs. He doesn't talk about them. He's just kind of focusing on, you know, the typical American oligarchs, which are dangerous, obviously. But right now we are, you know, he's not putting emphasis on the fact that Russia has attacked us and is trying to alter, you know, the outcomes of our elections, and that we're basically in a cyber war with them, or they're you know, have created a cyber war on us or whatever. Finally Democrats are starting to talk about that more, but I would like for all of them, including Bernie, to bring that up, and I don't hear it. So I'm not only holding him accountable for this, but since he does want to run for president, I think it would be kind of cool if he brought that up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well, you know, but I'm glad that he inspired a whole new crop of people to run, because these people are running and they're winning. Like, for instance, Randy Bryce, who's running in Wisconsin, is a Bernie-crat, and he's freaking awesome.
He is freaking awesome. And my buddy Andrew Jans.
Yes.
Running against Devi.
Yes.
He's got to get the nomination. But have we talked? Did we talk since Jans came to my house and inspired a room full of local people to drive their cars to freaking Visalia and canvass on his behalf?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it was pretty righteous.
Wow.
And this is a guy who he grew up in that Central Valley, in Evans district 22. Drew for 22 is the hashtag. And He went to school, you know, some Cal State, I think Stanislaus maybe, got his law degree at Southwestern University in LA, and then moved back immediately to his district, and he's a prosecutor there, assistant DA, doing his thing. Young guy, married, and just like went back to give back to his community. That's what it's about,
yeah.
Devin, you piece of garbage.
Yeah.
Your parents bought you that congressional seat. And now you're in Washington, D.C. committing crimes. You're never in your district. You aren't in touch with the people of your district. And you're probably going to go to jail. So, you know, we've got these people who actually care. Randy Bryce, he's walked the walk of you know, he's going to win. He's going to beat Paul Ryan. I really believe that.
I think that he has a very good chance, yeah.
Chelsea Handler's out there with him. Come on. Chelsea retweeted one of Andrew's tweets, and I'm like, okay, it's on.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing. Mike Levin. You know, Daryl Issa is running for the hills because he's also got, you know, criminal behaviors, I'm sure, that are going to be uncovered any minute.
Yeah.
But Mike Levin's going to take that from him. This blue tsunami is for real. And I got to say, you know, I'm looking at my notes now. I'm jumping back and forth, but the blue wave, the blue tsunami, that's the resistance talking. And that was born of the Women's March.
Yes. Which is coming up again.
Which is coming up again. I'm sad that I'm not going to be in DC to do it, but I'm going to be in Oakland with my whole family. I've got some friends who I went to DC with, and we're already coming up with some sign ideas. Anne Feinstein, the quote of 2018. So here's a quote that my friend Gretchen, who I marched in DC with, she there's a guy named Matthew Chapman who I don't follow on Twitter, but I'm going to after this. And his tweet said how 2017 went for women in one quote. And the quote is, she was warned, she was given an explanation, nevertheless, she persisted. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That was 2017. How 2018 is going for women in one quote. And this is a DeFi quote. I just decided to do it. And that was releasing the transcript.
Yeah.
So that's a sign. I just decided to do it. And that means for women, I just decided to run.
Yeah.
I just decided to speak up. I just decided to call that man in the office who said, you blow me and I'll give you the account. I decided to, you know, raise my hand at a city council meeting and say, you know, this is what's wrong with what's going on in my neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, that's who we are. That's
and
it.
She just pissed off Chuck Grassley when she released those transcripts, which I'm so grateful that she did, because I think she's going to go down in history for doing this. Mm-hmm. I definitely think, you know, I mean, and I'm not her biggest fan. Sometimes I'm not too thrilled on her decisions. She is definitely what those Bernie bros would refer to as an establishment candidate. But you know what? Mm-hmm. That establishment candidate, regardless of the fact that I don't agree with everything she does, she certainly stepped up and delivered.
Yep.
And yep. She knows how everything works. She's got the experience and the intelligence behind her. That's one of the things that really kind of, I don't mind, how can I say this? You know, I mean, the idea with the establishment candidate being a negative, I disagree with. I think that, you know, there are, and I said this before, obviously there's people who have been in government for a very long time, including Bernie, who understand how the game works and who are truly fighting for the people. Just because they're an establishment politician doesn't mean they're worthless. In fact, I think it can often mean the opposite. I think, though, that there are certain kinds of Democrats. There's, you know, I mean, there are criticisms of Hillary Clinton that I agree with. That doesn't mean I don't think she's capable. I think she was the most capable candidate. I think she was probably the most qualified person for the job of president of anybody in the country. I don't agree with everything. It's not that I have these stark differences, but I mean, I would like to have a different kind of a Democrat now. You know, I mean, it's like she to me represents the '80s Democrat, And yeah. I want
You want a 2020 Democrat.
Yeah. That's what I want. And I don't say that based on, you know, all the anti-Hillary propaganda that's been out there, because I don't want to discount, you know, I mean, every politician has legitimate, you know, there's legitimate criticism for anyone. I don't care who it is. So obviously there's legitimate criticism for Hillary. There's legitimate criticism for Bernie, whoever. I mean, I don't want to keep bringing them up, but just to make the point, you know, it's like, no matter who you're talking about, there's no perfect politician out there. There's always going to be somebody who, or there's always going to be something that you don't agree with. So that said, just because somebody's been in government for a long time doesn't mean that they're crooked or that you can't trust them, or that, you know, the politicians, basically, if there's a call for something, they're going to have to get behind it. You know, I mean, for instance, look at the healthcare debate. Unfortunately, Republicans, for the most part, didn't support keeping the ACA, but there was enough public outcry that it reached, you know, enough of them so that they didn't gut the ACA. And I think that when there's a public demand of anything, politicians realize I have to get reelected. I have to work for the people. And if I don't, I'm going to lose my seat. This is something that Republicans are having such a hard time with right now, because they're kind of caught between the big money donors and the constituents.
Caught?
Well,
they're
there's
no question, though, right?
What do you mean?
I mean, I just think they don't give a fuck about their constituents. And this is that's a sweeping generalization. But does Mitch McConnell really care about his constituents? He cares about his donors. Every single one of them that voted to pass that tax bill doesn't give a shit about their constituents. They said it. That's what they believe. And I mean,
but I think they're caught in that they know a blue wave is coming, and or at least they think a blue wave is coming, you know, providing they don't, you know, I mean, they've tried very hard to gerrymander and all, you know, God knows what else they're going to try to do with suppression and other things. But they do know they have to answer. I mean, that's like Susan Collins, you know, she was caught between.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I need my constituents need health care, or they're not going to vote for me again. And I think you're right. Most of them are beholden to their, you know, to the big money donors. But at the same time, they've got to get reelected. And, you know, Obama proved in 2012 that the money didn't matter, because there was some ridiculous amount of money put forth by the Republicans, and Obama won anyway. So I think that, you know, when you have an angry, uncomfortable public, you do have to listen to your constituents, and they're not doing it. And, you know, we're going to be up against a lot. We're going to have to, you know, there's that whole don't get happy. Bob loves to say don't get happy, and he's absolutely right. But beyond don't get happy, I mean, we have to engage. We have to canvass. We have to promote. We have to donate our money and our time and make phone calls and go beyond. We can't just say, oh, great, Democrats are going to show up, so I don't have to. We have to assume that no one's going to show up. And then we have to, you know, and the sad truth of the matter is we as human beings are basically motivated when we're uncomfortable. Once we get comfortable again, it's going to be hard. You know, I think we've got a good, solid generation right now who understands what happens when you don't vote and when you don't get involved. You get somebody like Trump. So, you know, I think that for a while, we've got, you know, I'm not going to say we can count on everybody showing up and voting, but I think we've got a pretty decent understanding within this generation how important it is. But then, you know, our generation dies out, and if people are comfortable, then they've got to learn from scratch again. You got to get some crazy person in there ruining everything.
Right.
You know, for everybody to go, oh, wait a minute, we have to pay attention.
Exactly.
So, well, that said,
we are woke.
That said, I think, and I started feeling this really early on. I mean, it's only the 10th, so I started feeling this like on the 3rd. But I think there's like things are changing with the narrative on Trump. Mm. I mean, do you feel that?
And in what way?
It's hard to be specific, but like, for instance, what I'm seeing on media, on cable news media, I'm seeing now, and like, I think in 2017, even though people like Lawrence O'Donnell called Trump a liar and called him out for either lies or things that he promised he would do and isn't going to do or whatever. I mean, obviously Lawrence is like a freaking dog with a bone and he doesn't hold back. But, you know, you've got Rachel Maddow and, you know, all the other people like Chris Hayes on MSNBC, who I don't really watch CNN, so I can't say too much about that. I'm just going to talk about MSNBC. But what I'm seeing on MSNBC is like for the first year of his presidency, for the most part, it's like they gave him a shot. But now what I'm seeing is the narrative on him is changing in that the mentally unfit thing continues to come up all the time. And so I think that that narrative getting pushed out into the general population is going to kind of like, it's going to be mirrored in the general population. It's going to go back onto to cable news back. And it's just like, it's just going to swell and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And Trump is going to be under this enormous amount of pressure this year because, you know, if we start winning these midterm elections, you know, what do they start in March? The first ones start in March. If we can start winning and sustain that and then take it all the way into November and blow out in November, the pressure between now and then and I think the constant hammering on Trump in the media of referring to him as mentally unfit, pushing this Russia thing, I mean, just the combination of it all, I see this narrative going from, okay, he's the president, we're going to give him a chance, hey, he lied, to, you know what, the man's unfit, he can't do his job, he's behaving like a child, he's going to kill us all. It's like, I'm seeing that.
Yeah. I'm with you. I get where you're coming from, and I agree. There's, you know, MSNBC is calling it like they see it, and they're not trying to be polite about it anymore.
Right.
In the morning, it's more newsy. In the evenings, it's just straight up. Like, here's my take on it. Right. My husband and I have started watching CNN more. Like, my husband doesn't like to put on MSNBC except for in the morning. And I think it's 'cause he wants to, check out Stephanie Ruhle, but, CNN is a little bit more newsy. And so, you know, I like to get a feel for that. I like to see when it's less sensational and when they're, you know, MSNBC, it's like we're having a conversation with them. Can you imagine their conversations when they're off mic?
Yeah, I know.
Please. But you saw Jake Tapper with Stephen Miller, didn't you?
Yes.
I mean,
oh my
was that,
God. Yes.
Was that insanity? And I think Stephen Miller and Donald Trump are taking the same drugs because Miller was a twitchy, dry mouth. He choked a couple of times, like when he was trying to speak. And these people are out of their minds.
Yes.
And they're Miller's motivated by racism and hate. Mm-hmm. Trump is motivated because somebody told him that racism and hate is going to make him more money. And that's all he needs to hear. You know, that's what he's motivated by. He's motivated by, I truly believe, and you could probably speak to this because you're reading Fire and Fury, but I don't think he even really necessarily loves his kids. Like, you know, like the way I love my kids.
No, I don't think so.
I'd throw myself on a train track. I'd kill another person to protect them. You know, I think he's like, well, my kids are good for me in this situation because they make me look better. They're going to help me earn more money, which is why I tolerate the Jew, Jared. You know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
You know, I would never speak like that in real life. But right. I think that's where he's coming from.
Right.
Because if it can get him more recognition, whether it's good or bad, but if in the end, if it's going to affect his bottom line in a positive way, great. And that's the only reason he's embraced this.
I think you're right. And I think that God, I mean, it's just fire and fury. Okay, but let's dig into the fire and fury.
Please.
Thing.
God, I'm so jealous.
Well, you know, I downloaded the Kindle app for my laptop, so you can do the same. And but I just couldn't wait. I just couldn't wait anymore. It's like I have to start reading it now. And I mean, I don't even think I'm finished with the first chapter. You know, and this is something I posted. I think you even I posted this on Twitter and you said something about it. So I know you saw it. But the idea that, you know, because what's his name? Michael Wolff talks about Trump didn't want the job. And this is the job the president didn't want. Melania was crying.
Not good tears.
No. So what I think, I mean, at least so far, is, you know, Trump was unable to get any money from American banks. So he had to go to Russian banks. This was going on for however long, years. And during that time, you know, obviously Vladimir Putin has his own ideas about what he wants to do and how he wants to destroy America. So he recognizes, you know, Trump is the perfect candidate for him. You know, he represents all the necessary requirements for the useful idiot. He's famous. You know, he started that whole the birther movement, not right. movement, but he really jumped on board. Yeah. You know, he's recognizable. He's, there's so many things that I remember reading somewhere that when Russians are looking for someone, to either, you know, get compromising, information on, or possibly even, you know, like running for president, that Trump basically represented the perfect person for that, which uh-huh. clearly was the perfect person because they got him a victory. But I think that, you know, the argument here is that, well, how can, if he didn't want to be president, then how could he have colluded with Russia to win? He didn't want to win. Well, I think it's very, very, very complicated. And I'm certainly not saying that I know exactly what the deal is. But I think that they didn't count on winning. And I don't necessarily think Trump wanted to win as much as he figured running for president will put me in a whole new category. I haven't been able to get American money. This is going to change that. Now everybody's going to want to give me money. I'm going to have such a great brand running for president. And then as written in the book, I can be Hillary's, you know, crooked Hillary's martyr. So right. I think there was definitely a desire to ruin her in the, you know, in the election, both for Putin, who probably didn't expect to win because he just wanted to create chaos for a Hillary presidency. And then surprise, surprise, Donald Trump, air quote, wins. But I don't think that Trump necessarily, he didn't want the job, maybe the title, but not the job. And so I think that, you know, whether it was communicated to Trump or just the basic knowledge that there might be some information the Russians have that Trump doesn't want public, motivating Trump to be friendly, to work with the Russians. But there's also the idea that, you know, he wanted to build Trump Tower in Moscow. So, of course, he wants to kiss Putin's ass. If Putin mm-hmm. or WikiLeaks or somebody has information on Hillary, then yes, we're going to take that information and we're going to, because we're probably not going to win, but we're going to, you know, we don't want to win or we don't want to lose by a huge margin. We want to be able to, you know, lose by a small margin. And just as like people were saying, Hillary needs to win by a big margin. I think Trump wanted to, I don't know that he wanted to lose, but if he did lose, he didn't want to lose big. So, you know, he wanted to do Trump television show and all that stuff. I mean, he basically had, you know, his plans for what was going to happen after the election and was surprised by the outcome. And yeah. I think he was freaked out. You know, I mean, last night, Rachel Maddow showed the footage of Trump walking out to give his speech on the night of the election after it was determined he was the winner. And he looked fucking confused and lost. It was just yeah. all over his face. It was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, was he right. disappointed? I don't know. Of course, once, you know, and they also talk about in the book the revisionist history that goes down. And the example was like after the Billy Bush tape came out, Trump was running around going, hey, you know what? They can alter those tapes to make it sound like it was you. So in Trump's head, he changed history that he didn't say that. He just doesn't believe he said that now. So regardless of what he wanted before the election, once he got, you know, the job, I think now he's all about, I deserve it. And I think that the reason
that was, I read that an excerpt from Wolf's book. He said he went like over minutes from like freaking the fuck out, and he watched his face change. And then by the end of the evening, he was like, well, fuck yeah, I should be president.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And
anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, that's, you're absolutely right.
I'll stop talking in a second and give you some time. But I mean, I think that the reason that they worked with the Russians is because they kind of had to. They had to because there was business dealings they wanted to accomplish over in Moscow. They want Trump Tower. They've got, you know, they're in debt, I'm sure, to you know, Russian oligarchs. So they had to. You know, it was not a question of, oh, well, maybe we will. It was, no, we have to. And I think that Trump doesn't necessarily see what he did as collusion. He saw it as business dealings. It was just business dealings. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I mean, like I said, I'm not even finished the first chapter. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating to read this. And I know it's killing him. So that makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, since we've been talking, some breaking news just popped up.
Oh yeah.
And it's that, he doesn't think he's going to be, he's declining, he meaning the Orange Menace, declined to say whether he would grant an interview to special counsel Robert Mueller and his team, deflecting repeated questions on the topic by saying there had been no collusion. We'll see what happens, is what he says. That's his favorite response. Are you going to bomb North Korea? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks that it's unlikely that there's even going to be an interview. Okay, well.
Okay.
Okay, guess what? You'll see what happens, dumbass.
There's other breaking news, by the way.
Tell us, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Steph. He said here, one of the great assets of Norway is a thing called water.
Oh, what?
That's a Trump quote. Right there. One of the great assets of Norway is a thing called water.
What does that even mean?
Big water. He's fascinated by big water.
God almighty.
God, he's so stupid.
You guys, he's so dumb.
He's so dumb, but you know what? I'm going back to this. Not only has the narrative changed on Trump in the media, I mean, I just think that things are different now. You know, we put up with him for a fucking year, and we're all pissed, and you know, it's the resistance, and now it's like, all right, this is an election year, and we are over this. We are over it. I feel that there's this new, you know, it certainly helps that the Virginia election, you know, all, women and transgender people and, you know, Alabama, New Jersey, these elections have given us some, you know, new hope and inspiration and like, okay. And also resolve, you know, to stay, to continue to resist, you know, and even though there's fatigue that we're going to feel, this is a different year. People are going to get, you know, people are going to win elections this year. And I'm going to hope, and I'm going to guess that a lot of those people are going to be progressive people, Democrats. And, I don't know. I think it's different. And
it is different.
I think that, you know, I want to bring this up, and I'm going to keep talking about some of this, like ERA. It's just going to be something I'm going to hammer. And I know that you and I are going to focus on progressive candidates, specifically female candidates. I know that our next show, we're going to interview Jess Phoenix, and she's so awesome. She's a volcano geologist, and she's got like Star Trek. She's got like kind of a, she wants to bring the, I don't know what the word is, but you know, the ethics, I guess, of Star Trek into Congress. And talk about progressive. She's so freaking awesome. She's a scientist. She's so smart. But right now, I want to talk about, just briefly, Renato Mariotti. I know I've talked about him before, but you know, he contacted me, I think it was in December, and asked if I would help amplify his campaign. So I said, sure. And we started like, it's a Twitter group chat. So there's a bunch of us in there, and I brought up the Equal Rights Amendment, and he became very interested in learning more about it, which led to a phone call where I spoke with his campaign manager and Renato, and you know, because they wanted to jump right in and start doing tweet storms. And I'm like, well, you've got to know. If you don't know about the ERA, you have to understand what the arguments against it are, so that you can, you know, instead of saying things like, oh, did you know that American men and women aren't equal? If you say that, you're going to get, well, we've got the 14th Amendment, we've got the 15th Amendment. So yeah. Instead of having to run back and start it off with the 14th and the 15th are not enough because, and one of the reasons because is because we needed to have the 19th Amendment, which was the right to vote. If there was no discrimination against gender, that would have been a, you know, an automatic thing. Women would have been able to vote, but they weren't able to vote. And, anyway, so Renato, I'm just pushing this for everybody listening. Go check him out. So it's Renato Mariotti, and that's Mariotti, right? Is that his name?
Did
I spell it right? He's Renato. On Twitter. He's a Yale graduate. He spent 9 years as a federal prosecutor, and he has taken on the ERA. He can't believe that it, you know, right now we only need two more states to ratify. Then we need Congress, which we need progressive, specifically progressive women, to just basically, we could put a slider in on a bill to, you know, dissolve the expired deadline or to lift it or whatever. And boom, we got the ERA. It could totally happen. It could totally happen by 2024. It could be in the Constitution, because once it's ratified, the specifications of the amendment say 2 years. It takes 2 years to go in. So by 2024, we could have it. And, he, you know, if you go to Renato's, it's renatomariotti.com, you can look up, I don't think he's put the ERA on his issues. We're talking to his campaign manager about putting that on his platform, on the website. But on his website, he talks about, you know, all the things that he's going to fight for. He's going to fight for the ERA, no matter if he wins or loses. He's literally the real deal. He's always on Twitter breaking down, the Trump-Russia stuff. He's very smart and dedicated, and his freaking father was a Walmart cashier, and his mother answered phones at an insurance company. So he is, just like you were saying about Oprah, he's not a black woman. he doesn't have that, but I mean, he's just your everyday person who, you know, got scholarships, graduated Yale, and he's worked as a federal prosecutor against white collar criminals. And he knows what he's talking about. And I just think he's a great guy. And I don't say that because I'm like a fangirl. I say that because he listens to, you know, in fact, one of the things that we had a conference call with a bunch of the people who are helping him out. And he asked us our opinions, like, how, you know, what do you think I should be doing? And I suggested that he do some question and answers, where he takes questions from people on social media and then addresses them either in a video or a tweet thread. And he did it. He did both. Mm-hmm. So he listens to people, and he wants to.
Was that applause in the background?
Yeah, Bob's clapping. Mm-hmm. he's a super guy. So.
He is a super guy.
Anyway, before we go into another thing, is there anything else you want to add?
Let me see. Let me refer to my notes. No. Okay, but I do want to echo your hopefulness and your feelings of like confidence and encouragement, because we are, this is a very, it's a crazy making time, and we all feel, you know, a lot older and a lot more fatigued and exhausted. And, but it's also, you know, we are part of a revolution, and albeit, you know, we're going to have our version of storming the Bastille. Yes. We're not going to be demanding bread. We're going to demand that that piece of shit take an early retirement,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Or resign or whatever you want to call it, but we're not having it because it's not okay. What's going on? This is America. We believe in democracy. We cherish that democracy. And, you know, it makes me feel so good to be able to do this with you, to know that we're talking to Jess, to know that we've talked to Charlotte Clymer, to talk to John Pavlovitz, to talk to Claude Taylor and people who really care about preserving all that is good and improving upon that even.
And I said this on Bob's show, but I'm going to say it here just real quick. In Claude's defense, since that time that he fell for the fake information coming from Schneiderman's office and he admitted it, he said, you know, I fell for it. And it was supposedly all fake information. Before that, he said Hope Hicks and Corey Lewandowski were having an affair. Mm-hmm. That's something that Michael Wolff talks about in the book.
Yeah.
He also said that Melania and Donald were going to get a divorce. Now,
yeah.
I don't know, you know, obviously her tears, you know, Claude was saying that the sources he had told him that they were planning on getting a divorce, but had to rewrite whatever contract that they were in or whatever it was. Like he won, she would have to stay married to him. The Michael Wolff assertion is that, you know, she just wanted to basically go do her thing and her lunching. They don't really have a life together. She has her thing. He has his thing. And she was happy just, you know, living kind of under the radar. So,
well, under the radar with her security guard from Tiffany's boyfriend. What was that hot? What was that?
I can't remember his name.
I can't. How quickly
I think that those tears, you know, I should say this. I think that Claude Taylor, he's actually starting now to get back into tweeting what his sources are saying. Like, I think I saw a tweet today that said McGahn lied to the FBI. That one of his sources said that. And so now he's out and thinks that, you know, McGahn might be working on a deal. I don't know what the deal is, but I just kind of wanted to come in defense of Claude, because aside from the fact that, you know, what he's doing is he's pushing for progressive candidates and he's getting billboards made to shame people like Rohrabacher and
Matz
and what's his name?
Is it Gates or
Gates?
Getz or
probably
however
Gates.
It's
yeah.
He's had 70 UIs.
Yeah. So
what a
so
piece
I think
of shit.
I think that's cool that he's doing that. You know,
it's great that he's doing that.
Anyway,
it's great. You know how inexpensive those billboards are?
I know. I was thinking we should maybe come up with some kind of campaign on our own. But I don't know if I'm ready to do that.
I am.
I know you are. You're the most enthusiastic human being I've ever met.
Well,
and I say that lovingly.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, that's a compliment. Yeah, I have all sorts of ideas, which, you know, you and I and Bob I want you to hear me out.
Okay.
Not now.
Right.
Because it's not ready. It's not ready for prime time. But when it is, I think we could, you know, we've got people who we can tap into to create really big stirs across the country.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, we'll talk about it after and another thing.
Okay.
But, and then maybe when we talk to Jess Phoenix, we can bring it up then.
Well, that's a good idea. And so before we go, let me just do the thing I got to do.
Do it, girl.
Is asking for support. So basically I'm just saying, you know, you can support us. You can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. And, you know, you don't have to pledge the farm. You could give us a dollar a month. You could give us $5 a month. And $5 gets you into another thing, which is the segment that's coming up after this. We're going to be talking about really private things that you can't hear unless you give us $5 a month. And
that's like a tall coffee at Starbucks with a tip.
Exactly.
Please.
And you could also become a subscriber for $10,000 a month, and we'll totally be happy with that. So that's up to you. Anyway, this was the first show. I mean, God, I felt like we only got to half of what we wanted to talk about. But we're going to move on to end another thing and talk about all those private, interesting things that you wish you knew. Anyway.
And I'm hungry like the wolf.
There you go. See ya next time.
Bye.